were just listening to Okkervil River, Last Love Song for Now. And the reason why we played that was that is a Chloe Codwell, who we have in the studio right now. That is a line that was pulled directly from that song for her, the title of her book that just recently released, Legs Get Laid Astray. How are you doing?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And can you tell us a little bit of how you picked that song to start the title of your book?
Sure. Yeah, it wasn't the original title. I had a bunch of like really dorky titles looking back. My first title was, Sundown Yellow Moon Nightbird, which is very long. Then I tried some other things from Okkervil River. Like I tried just because I just really like his words. And when I was writing this book, I was listening to a lot of that. I love that band so much. So sometimes I would just look up his lyrics online and just read them and kind of get inspired while I was writing, use them for inspiration. So I used a couple of things from him. I was going to call it, I think, Diaries Get Found and Opened, because that's something I talk about in my book, is like reading other people's diaries and snooping. So that was one, and that's too long. I tried a couple other things, and sometimes I would take like directly the title from his song, like Last Love Song for Now, but that didn't really work. And then finally I was reading the stanza, and I quote it in the beginning of the book. And should I read it?
Yeah.
Okay. It says, kids get lost, lambs out wandering. And that was actually, when I submitted this manuscript, it was called Lambs Out Wandering. Kids get lost, lambs out wandering, bigger, blacker things come calling. From outside, a tiny garden somebody once laid their hearts on. And kids get lost, and kids get broken, diaries get found and opened. Their legs get led astray, and then they lie inside some secret place where the sun looks in the open ceiling. Kids grow up and kids stop feeling. Kids then feel adult and face away. So I took the legs get led astray from that eventually, and I'm happy with it. Yeah. And we got his permission, so it's all good.
I want to congratulate you on the publication. It's an amazing looking it's an amazing looking object.
Thank you.
And I'm excited to read it. And I'm interested. All of the descriptions, I've read a little bit of your work, and all of this, the descriptions of this collection of essays, call it provocative,
right,
or something of that sort. Can you talk a little bit about about what your writing is like?
Sure. I think the reason it's been called provocative is just, I don't know, I just have this thing. I never really held back with my writing. I did an interview the other day, and the guy was asking me, weren't you afraid of your family while you were writing it? And I said, no, not really. I was just writing for fun and for myself. And I think I just have this thing where I'm not afraid of that, because I have a good relationship with my family and friends. And I stand behind things that I wrote in the book, even though I wrote them when I was younger. And they are shocking to some people, I suppose. But yeah, they're personal essays, and they're very personal. I give a lot of details of my life that people usually don't want to talk about. So I think that's why the book is getting a reaction that I would put on paper, things that people like hide from themselves their whole lives. So I think people find it kind of interesting, whether they like it or hate it, you know.
But do you also have a large journal count? Like, do you do a lot of journaling as in addition?
Oh, yeah.
And then you pull from that and start to
develop. Actually, I think stories. That's why this book is the way it is. I was such an avid journaler. I looking back on those journals when I was living in New York City and working on this book. Well, I didn't know I was working on the book. You know, I was just journaling, taking notes about my life. And when I look back, it's kind of like all of my old journals are this book. It has the same kind of feel as a journal. It's like you're reading my diary, except it's, you know, crafted into these essays. I think journaling really helps for the personal essay genre. Yeah.
Could we hear a little bit of from it?
Sure. I'll read a couple pages of a shorter piece. This piece is called Girlfriend. This was just made into a broadside from Powell's in Portland, Oregon. So I guess right now on the Powell's website, if you buy, it's called Indispensable, and it's a whole package. And if you buy this new book that Tin House just put out called The Listeners by Lainey Zumas, you get her book and you get this broadside and you get some other fun stuff. So
nice.
I'll read some of this. Okay, Girlfriend. You have a girlfriend now, but when we were 11, we sat next to each other in art class and you got in trouble for talking to me. And when the teacher said your name, you motioned towards me and said, she provoked me. I didn't know what that word provoke meant at that time, and I wanted to know, and I knew that I wanted you in my life. You have a girlfriend now, but when we were 12, I was your girlfriend, and we were both in the play Once Upon a Mattress. We pecked on the lips in the hallway by the gym while a circle of kids stood around us. You have a girlfriend now, but when we were 13, we slept head to feet on Friday nights in my bed under the pink and white striped comforter that I still sleep under, and we read Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul aloud to each other, and sometimes I cried at the stories, and you laughed at me. You have a girlfriend now, but when we were 14, you taught me how to smoke out of a seltzer can. We walked around to the cement tunnels at the Spencertown playground, and in the tunnels you told me that smoking and not talking about it was the best. You asked me why I always had to talk about everything, and I didn't know how to answer you then, but I do now. You have a girlfriend now, but when we were 15 and my parents got separated, you started sleeping over again, and you let me wear your red and white baseball t-shirt that I loved to bed. In the morning, my dad dropped us off at my therapist's office and we went grocery shopping. You read 17 magazine and waited for me in the waiting room. You have a girlfriend now, but when we were 16, you would check for blood on the back of my jeans. You would block me when I was at my locker getting a pad to put in my pocket. You have a girlfriend now, but when we were 18 and I came to your house, we stood in the sun and watched one of your llamas give birth. You have a girlfriend now, but when we were 19, I went to visit you in Providence, where you went to Johnson and Wales Culinary School. And we played beer pong in your basement with your roommates, and I threw up in the trash can, and I slept close to you in your bed. And in the morning, we went and got falafels. You have a girlfriend now, but when I turned 20, you bought me a lottery ticket, and I won $20. And we drove around in your green truck on dirt roads, and you told me you wanted to be so good with money, but that you were actually so bad with money, and I agreed, and I am still struggling with that fact now. You have a girlfriend now, but when we were 21, you came to visit me in New York City. We met somewhere near 12th Street and saw each other from afar. It was like a movie moment, and we ran to hug each other. You were drinking Gatorade, and I asked you, "People still drink Gatorade?" We put my white comforter on the floor in the living room and called it a daybed and slept there listening to Acaville River. You have a girlfriend now, but you used to have a pig, Nellie Jewel, that blocked the front of the door to your house, and you had parrots and cats and little black kids that your mother adopted with ludicrous names. You have a girlfriend now, but I have photos of us from all of my birthdays, and you are next to me while I turned 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. You have a girlfriend now, but you used to text me your dreams in the morning, and I used to sleep with my face in your armpit. You have a girlfriend now, but you used to make sure I ate. Like when I was depressed, you'd say, "You have to eat something real." And when I'd order yogurt and granola, you'd shake your head with disappointment and order huevos rancheros yourself. You have a girlfriend now, but you used to make grilled cheese sandwiches with salami and vinegar, and you'd make your own pita chips and herbs. You have a girlfriend now, but one morning at your mother's house after your brother's wedding, we were eating bagels. I ate mine so fast that you wordlessly put your other half on my plate because you knew I was hungry. You have your own catering business now, and you live in Colorado. You have a girlfriend that does this. You have a girlfriend that does that. You have a girlfriend that does everything. You have a girlfriend that does nothing. Thanks.
That's very cool. I was thinking while you were just reading about the genre of personal essay and how to write something that is so intimate and so personal in a way that connects with any kind of reader, whether or not they've experienced anything like what you're talking about, or
right.
The sort of the cadence of that is a little bit mesmerizing.
Yeah, that's one of the ones. It's funny. The reaction, my editor and I threw those kind of repetitive ones in. I kind of got on this thing where I wrote a couple of those really fast, and we threw them in to break up like the longer personal essays. Some people really like them, and some people keep saying like they don't like the repetitive stuff that's in the book. Mm-hmm. Which is funny because they're not, maybe I think people are preferring like the narrative arc, and I have a lot of that too. It's kind of just a mixture of things. And what you said about that, I was talking to someone about that, and I think it's that if the personal details are so personal to you, it forces other people to think about their own details. So it's not that we all have the same details. They're all very unique to the person, but it makes you go to that place and think about your life in that way.
Yeah.
And speaking of place, did you write this in Hudson? Did you write this in another city?
Right. I wrote a lot of it in Hudson, and I wrote a lot of it in Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. And I wrote some of it in Brooklyn. So I was kind of all around. But I've been living in Hudson about a year and a half, and I I finished it here and did the bulk of the work on it in the past year here. Yeah.
Well, and one of the reasons that we invited Chloe in today was because Chloe is not only a writer, but also has founded and is curating this Hudson River Loft reading series. And there's actually an event happening this Saturday on May 12th. It's located at the Hudson Loft on 17 North 4th Street and brings together a whole bunch of readers. And I sort of have a two-part question for you. Sure. First, I want to hear you talk about the event. And then I've seen you organize a couple of these events where you bring together writers that I assume you like.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear you talk a little bit about the community of writers that you are in and around and how that plays into your own work. But maybe first we can hear about this Saturday's event.
Okay. So, yeah, this Saturday, 17 North 4th Street upstairs, the loft above Musica. It's free, 7 p.m. And I think there's about seven writers coming to read. I'll just tell you who they are. One is Jillian Lauren, and she's a New York Times bestseller. She wrote the memoir Some Girls, My Life in a Harem and the novel Pretty. So she's coming. She lives in L.A., but she'll be in Hudson for a little while. Jason Diamond may or may not come, and he lives in New York City, and he's the founder of Volume One Brooklyn. Hallie Goodman lives in Hudson, New York. She's a freelance writer, and she'll be reading from her memoir in progress. Courtney Mom, she is also a freelance writer. She splits her time between the Berkshires and New York City. She's like a humor writer, so she'll be there. Joseph Rippey, he has a book called A Cloth House, and he lives in New York. Rob Todd also lives in New York. He's the author of the collection Steal Me for Your Stories. And Cassie Underwood lives in New York, and she's an essayist. So it's a good group.
So how does it work? Everybody reads pieces of their work, some work in progress.
Yeah, they read whatever they want, and they read for like 7 minutes. We usually do like three or four readers, and then we have a break. We're actually going to have music. We had music at the last one too. Ilana Bell Carroll, who's a local person, she's living in Brooklyn now. She'll be playing in between a couple songs, and then we have the rest of the readers, and then we all kind of hang out and go out. It's been really great. I just have them seasonally at the loft. So this is actually only the third one, but they've been going really well. It's been a great response.
Will you tell us about the loft?
Sure. Have you been to the loft?
I have, but I love that it's a home.
Yeah.
It's sort of your home.
Yeah, it is a home. It's above the music store that my dad owns, and it's just a big spacious loft, windows, not a lot of privacy, but great for shows. Like there's kind of one main room that, and then the kitchen is off of there, and there's a big room, and we have musical shows there a lot. And after having those, and I started doing readings other places, at bars and at cafes and at people's houses. And then I realized that we could really use a reading series here. And since we had the space, and just doing it there.
I like thinking of the kind of intimate that your work is being read in that sort of intimate space.
Yeah, I think that might be why it works out. The problem with the reading series, like in New York and stuff, it's they can be really loud. You know, they're at bars. Some people are there to hear the reading. Some people are there to drink. So this one, everyone's there by choice and they know what's going on. And it's very casual and at the same time professional. So it's been really great. And then it allows all these different writers to meet each other.
Right. So the second part of my question, especially since you're a young writer, I really would love to hear about the both community of peers that you have in being a writer, which is such solitary work. A community of mentors is sort of what your world is around your work.
Yeah, yeah, it is solitary work. And then I think when you find reading series, that's why there's some writers. I mean, they probably hate doing readings, but there are so many that they just love it. So. And the people that do love it, you kind of start to see the same faces at all the readings, and you'll see these people just keep doing readings. For example, I mean, the fact that they're all going to travel up here to do a reading, you know, that's costly, and they know it's a good time. I have a good network of writers, mostly because I go to Portland, Oregon a lot, and that's where my publisher is, and out there, the support system is just really amazing. So when I went out there, I met a ton of writers. That's where I met Jillian Lauren, who's now going to be in Hudson, you know, and the Brooklyn thing. And then just kind of by going to readings and getting friendly with the host of other reading series, that helps. And then we all just support each other and come out to each other's things. But going to Portland definitely helps, because then I'm kind of on both sides, you know, of the U.S. So I get to meet a lot of people. And I have a lot of mentors out there in Portland. Kevin Samsell is my publisher, and he works at Powell's Books and coordinates the events there. So through him, he knows a lot of writers. So he's introduced me to many, many people. So that was helpful.
What are you working on now besides distributing your book? Or actually, let me rephrase that. What is involved in distributing your book? And so what does it mean your life is right now?
Yeah. So it's kind of just getting the book out there into people's hands. It's going to the post office to mail books out, to mail like review copies out, and then people can buy it on my website. So I get some orders there and go to the post office. So it's that. And then also going to stores, small bookstores, and just kind of talking to booksellers, asking if they want to carry the book. So, and what I'm working on now. So I'm writing essays. I'm not working on another collection or anything, just like I wasn't really working on this collection. I was just writing essays, and it kind of made itself. So doing essays here and there. You were talking about Judy Blum. You saw me post something on Facebook. All of a sudden I wanted to read like all the books I read in adolescence. I don't know why. It was like a bug came over me. So I'm on this Judy Blum kick. Right here I have Just As Long As We're Together, which was like one of my favorites. I think it's a trilogy. I kind of want to reread them, and just, I'm really curious about Judy Blum. I'm, after writing this book and seeing how exhausting it is and like how, you know, stuff like that, I'm just wondering, how could this woman write so many amazing books? So I kind of want to read some more about her and then reread the books that I used to love and maybe do an essay on her. Yeah, I have some ideas.
You know the celebrity game where you put a sticker and someone puts a sticker on your forehead with the name of a celebrity and you have to ask questions about yourself?
Oh, okay, yeah.
I was playing that recently and I had someone put Judy Blum on my forehead, and I spent like an entire afternoon trying to figure out who I was.
Oh, that's great.
And learning a lot about Judy Blum.
You learn? Any interesting facts? I don't know much about her herself, you know.
I'm trying to remember now. I know she's from New Jersey, mm-hmm. and I didn't know that.
She had a place in Hillsdale for a while.
Oh, she had a place in Hillsdale, and she's...
I think she lives in Long Island.
And I did also learn that I learned how prolific she really was, which is not something I had totally realized. You're right. She produced an amazing amount of work.
Amazing amount. Yeah. Yeah. And for them all to be successful, it wasn't like she had 3 books, you know, that were pretty good and then the rest weren't so good. It's just, they all got a lot of attention. Yeah.
We read an interview. We were just looking at an interview that you did very recently, I think like last week online. Mm-hmm. And the last question that he asked was, what did you wish I had asked you?
Oh, yeah.
Your answer is that you wished he had asked you what you were listening to right now. So I think we're sort of mandated to ask you, what are you listening to these days?
And I told him I was listening to Ace of Base. You know, I need new music. I obviously...
You're listening you're reading Judy Blum and listening to Ace.
I know. I'm going through something. It's totally, I'm like going through this escape thing after, since the book's out. It's like I'm on vacation and I'm like want to veg out, and my way of doing that is like going back to childhood. It's really weird. So Ace of Base. Let's see. I really like, do you guys know this songwriter? Her name's Emmy Curl. Oh, she has a beautiful song. It's like I can't remember the name of it. She has like a 3-song EP. She's wonderful. I listened to Sharon Van Etten lately, and I don't know. I need new. Can you recommend something?
The radio.
Well, yeah, I listen to the radio. You guys are great, obviously.
Chloe, thank you so much
for
joining us today.
Me.
I'm going to repeat just the details. On this Saturday at the Loft, which is above Musica in Hudson, that's 17 North 4th Street. It's easy to spot because it's, even though it's got kind of a hard to find backdoor entrance, it's right above Musica, so you can't miss it. Mm-hmm. It is this Saturday at 7 p.m. And the readers include Jillian Lauren, Jason Diamond, Hallie Goodman, Courtney Mom, Joseph Rippey, mm-hmm. Rob Todd, Cassie Underwood, and you? Are you going to be reading?
I don't think I'm going to be reading, but I'll be there and I'll have my books for sale.
Well, thank you so, so much.
Thank you for
having me.
We'll
see you on Saturday.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
wouldn't you lie?